Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I am your host today, Susan Franzen, and Ursula Rudenberg is my co-host. Hi, Ursula.
Hi, Susan. We have a very full plate today, and that's appropriate because a lot of our program will be about Thanksgiving. First, we'll hear from Hannah Dankbar and Rebecca Brown. They're introducing a new show to KHOI, and it'll be a monthly show for starters, and then hopefully it'll grow, and it's about the activities of the Story County Volunteer Center. Then we'll talk about the community Thanksgiving meal and what's new there. It's been hosted at the First Christian Church for the past 26 years, and things are going to change a little bit. And who do we have on hand for that?
We have Mary Jane Button Harrison, pastor of the First Christian Church, and Chris Martin of Food at First, the new host for the Thanksgiving dinner in 2013. Following that, we'll hear from two other people telling us about other changes in the neighborhood, Sue Woos of Ames Community Preschool Center and Mike Fritz of Good Neighbor Emergency Assistance. For the last part of our program today, we'll be exploring something that is a big issue for most of the farmers in this area. After reporter Greta Anderson started asking questions about something three farmers around her were doing, she found that all the farmers are doing it. Ursula tells us that even the Meskwaki farmers are doing it. To find out what it is, stay tuned till the end of the program. But now, let's get started with the guests in our studio. Here we have...
I'm Rebecca Brown. I'm one of the AmeriCorps Vistas with the Volunteer Center of Story County. And I'm one of the school garden coordinators.
I'm Hannah Dankbar. I'm also an AmeriCorps Vista with the Volunteer Center, and I do volunteer engagement.
So with the Volunteer Center of Story County, our mission is to inspire, educate, and mobilize volunteers within the area. We have programs like the poverty simulation that we do in the fall, winter weatherization, the school gardens, of course. And we're currently planning for Family Volunteer Day and Martin Luther King Day. We also promote service learning opportunities in various schools around the Story County. And we help folks find volunteer opportunities, you know, in the area that they're in. You can always find volunteer opportunities on our website, www.vcstory.org, or you can call us at the office, and that's 515-268-5323.
We decided to do a program with KHOI because we wanted to reach a wider group throughout Story County to promote volunteerism, too. Part of being an AmeriCorps is we get to meet so many amazing people, and we want to have an effective way to share those stories throughout the county. There's some incredible people doing some incredible things, and they deserve some recognition, and we thought that this would be a good way to get their story out as well as encourage volunteerism in other areas. We would also want to educate the community about different needs so that people take ownership and are able to just know more about their community.
Rebecca and Hannah, thank you so much for coming here today and introducing your show. And we're really looking forward to hearing it on KHOI. The Story County Volunteer Center has been a really good partner with KHOI in terms of helping us find volunteers. And you actually yourselves are volunteering here at the station above and beyond the radio show you're doing. And it's really great to have you. And you also create a great model for other organizations to utilize KHOI as a community resource to get word out about the good work you're doing. Before you go, can you just say a word or two about what the process has been like of proposing a show to KHOI and going all the way to having it approved?
Yeah, I can share about that. It's been pretty easy. I came in and just met with everybody at the station, and everybody was very warm and welcoming. It was a great experience, and got the proposal form. So I took it back to our office, and we talked about it and what our goals are and how it aligns with KHOI's mission. And we just filled it out, came back, dropped it off, and made our promo.
KHOI is a community resource, and we welcome community services to utilize these airwaves to make our community better. So thanks for stepping up and doing that, and we look forward to hearing your show.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you.
And in keeping with the harvest season, reporter Greta Anderson visited the farm of Lauren and Ruth Book for an antique tractor plow. They'll tell us about that at the end of the show. And now we have with us Mary Jane Button Harrison and Chris Martin. We'll start out with you, Mary Jane. How long has First Christian Church been hosting the Community Thanksgiving?
This year will be our 26th year.
Wow. And how has it grown over the years?
Well, it started out just an idea among a couple of members at First Christian Church who didn't necessarily have a place to go and thought, you know, I'll bet there are other people in a city like Ames of people who don't have family around and who need a place to come and have Thanksgiving dinner. And so it started kind of small, just, you know, whoever's around can come. And it has grown so big that we recently, in recent years, have served 499 meals on Thanksgiving Day.
Well, it sounds like that those couple of volunteers must be a little tired. Or
It has developed. It has changed in terms of leadership through the years. So it's not the original leaders that were doing it 26 years ago. But the event has taken shape such that in this community, if you want to see a microcosm of the world, come to First Christian Church for the community-wide Thanksgiving dinner, because you see people from all walks of life, all rich and poor, young and old, international students and their families, families who are local to Ames and have been for years and bring their children because they want to experience the fullness and the richness of the community, which is all there present on Thanksgiving Day, which makes a lot of sense when you think about how Thanksgiving originated, at least how I was taught in grade school.
Well, but no wonder you needed help. And how did you decide to ask Fruit at First to step in?
Well, we had a kind of a powwow at First Christian because the folks who had been doing the leadership and doing such a good job that it has grown so much just really got tired and needed a break. And there was no one else that felt like they could step into those very big shoes. And so several of us sat around a table one day and said, let's just check in with Food at First and see if they have any great ideas about how we might partner together. We at First Christian Church like to have lots of partners so that we can do more good for the community of Ames. And so I called Chris, and Chris started his mind thinking, and that's how it all began.
Well, now we'd like to know what Chris's mind thought when he got the call. What did you think when you got the call, Chris? This is Chris Martin, by the way.
Good morning. My thought when I got the call was we couldn't not have a meal on that day. Food at First does a meal 364 days a year. Thanksgiving has traditionally been our one day off. But we felt like it just wouldn't be right to not have a community meal on Thanksgiving Day. And if First Christian decided not to do it, we would have to do one anyway. So we figured let's use the resources that First Christian's put together so far and just get it done.
So, and what do you have to do to get ready? Somebody said you don't have trouble getting volunteers on the day. Is that trouble? Is that true?
That's true.
It's not a problem to get volunteers. We put our volunteer shifts out, I think about 70 of them 2 weeks ago, and I looked at the end of the day yesterday, and there were maybe a half a dozen slots left.
So. And in past years, we've had to cut it off at a certain point because we've had over 100 volunteers who want to come and bring their kids and do something like that, which has a lot of meaning and lifelong experiences for kids, too.
Yeah.
Well, another volunteer opportunity we put out this year was for homemade pies. We put a sign up out there for, I think, 70 homemade pies, and those slots are nearly full, too.
Well, so do you still need pies?
I think we do. I think we probably need another 10.
So if somebody wants to donate a pie, what do they do?
Go to foodatfirst.com, click on the Thanksgiving link, and then you'll see another link that says click here to sign up to bring a pie.
So that's foodatfirst.com.
Foodatfirst.com.
That is one of the wonderful things of combining our resources is we used to have office staff having to take every phone call for all of those volunteers and then another person calling them back and telling them where they would go. And now it can all happen because of their infrastructure at Food at First.
So, Chris, what's for dinner on Thanksgiving dinner?
440 pounds of turkey, probably 150 pounds of ham.
There will be tofurkey.
Oh, yes.
We are vegetarian friendly.
Right. Mashed potatoes, sweet potatoes, gravy, cranberries, rolls, pie, lots of pie.
Pie.
And where does the food come from?
Most of the food is donated. This year we're getting half of the turkey from the Food Bank of Iowa. Sweet potatoes were donated by a farmer over north of Nevada. We actually dug them last Sunday.
Wow.
We get as many things donated as we can.
Mm-hmm. And do you have a regular crew that kind of guides this process?
I don't know yet.
This is the first year of this partnership.
Yeah,
so
I think we're going to have some people that had been involved in years past at First Christian.
Yes.
Hopefully some crew leaders.
Right.
That will have an idea of how the whole system runs. I mean, we have an idea how it works because we do it every day at Food at First.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a different kitchen. It's a different flow. So there'll be a steep learning curve for me.
Mm-hmm. So do you have you enjoyed doing this dinner in the past?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. The church loves to do this. And in fact, that there's a lot of grief with just the thought that we wouldn't be able to do it. And so we're very thrilled that we can do this in a way that combines our resources in a creative new way. Mm-hmm. Resources for everyone, are kind of taxed these days. And so it's nice when we can create partnerships that is a win-win-win all the way around.
Mm-hmm. And what has been the curve of the increase over the years? I think, what did you start out with, for example?
Well, I don't know the exact number, but it was probably, somewhere around 30 people.
Now you're up to nearly 500.
Yes, yes.
And is there ever a concern that you might not have space enough for the...
No.
Never.
Where is it?
It's in our fellowship hall, which is in the basement of our church, and it's over a two-hour period, and people just come and go, and it just works. It mm-hmm. just works, and I don't know. It's one of those things where there's room, and if there's not room, we make room. We figure it out. There's people on the spot who will problem solve and set up another table somewhere.
So before we go, Chris, why don't you just let people or describe just a little bit what Food at First is and who the team is that's coming in to do this.
Food at First started 10 years ago this coming March as a community-wide meal one night a week for anyone that wanted to come. And it grew into a 7-day-a-week, 364-day-a-year meal program, again, for anyone that wants to show up. And then about 4 years ago, we started a perishable market. We call it the free market. We distribute groceries to anyone that shows up three times a week. So in 2013, we will have served about 38,000 people through our free market and served about 25,000 meals at the meal program.
And what is the philosophy behind it? What's your...
Well, our mission statement is... feed people and recycle food with no questions asked. 99% of the food that we use for both the meal program and the free market is donated food or gleaned food that would have been perfectly good food that would have otherwise been thrown away. So we pick it up from grocery stores, restaurants, Iowa State Dining, private individuals, local farmers.
So describe if somebody wanted to come and either see the dinner that you're serving or actually come and enjoy the dinner, describe where they have to go, what they have to do.
The dinner is at First United Methodist Church.
Which is?
It's at 516 Kellogg. It's, again, 7 days a week. Sunday through Friday, it's at 5:30. And then Saturday, the meal is at 11:30 in the morning.
And where do they go?
You can come in either. You can come in any door of the church, and you'll smell your way to the kitchen. The kitchen's in the basement. Our free market is at 116 Washington, down by Starbucks, actually. And our distributions are Monday and Thursday at 5 o'clock and Saturday morning at 10. And anybody and everybody is welcome to come.
Okay, great. And we'll have that information also on the KHOI-FM website connected to this story, to this show. And if somebody wants to check out the Thanksgiving dinner, when, where, how,
that
who?
That'll be at First Christian Church, and that's at 6th and Clark, right across from City Hall, from 11 to 1 on Thanksgiving Day. And as we mentioned before, if you do want to volunteer or bring a pie or whatever, sign up at foodatfirst.com and click on the Thanksgiving link. All are welcome.
So you don't have to be any particular type of person, just if you want
every
to come
type
and eat?
Of person. Yes, anybody
person.
Who anybody
person.
Who a hungry person who can kind of appreciate being in a space with lots of different kinds of folks.
That's great. And the address again?
6th and Clark, 611 Clark.
You're the church that always has the slogans.
Yeah.
On the sign, right?
Right,
yeah.
Right.
Well, also the Spanish language. Right now you don't have room for the slogan because you have your turkey.
Yeah,
your
we
turkey
have
sign.
A turkey. That's right, that's right.
Okay, well, any last words before we say goodbye to you this morning? Anything else that you want to communicate?
I would just want to say that it is truly an experience to behold, and so I hope if someone out there didn't know about the dinner, you'd just come and experience it because it's quite an amazing thing.
And we hope to break the record on attendance
That's
this
right.
year.
That's right. That's right.
I want to see 600 people come.
Chris, I overheard here at the Pantorium a conversation where a local farmer just happened to be on the phone. And I heard him pick up the phone and say, I have like a few hundred carrots. Can you use them? Was that about the Thanksgiving dinner?
No, that was just an everyday event.
That's an everyday event.
I got a call 2 weeks ago from a farmer over in Nevada and said, I've got a field full of sweet potatoes. If you guys want to come and dig them, they're yours.
That's wonderful.
So we put a crew together of about 25 people, and we went out there and dug 3,500 pounds of potatoes in an hour and a half.
Wow.
And we could have had more, but we don't have room for them.
So Food at First serves farm-to-table food.
Absolutely.
That's wonderful. Okay, well, thanks, guys.
Well, this is KHOI Radio, and we've been hearing the plans for the community Thanksgiving dinner at the First Christian Church with the partnership of Food at First. Thank you, Chris, very much.
You're welcome.
For,
thank you.
Telling us about Food at First in the free market, and we'll keep Pastor Mary Jane here to answer some more questions. Okay. Now, I understand that there's some big changes going on at the First Christian Church besides the partnership for Thanksgiving. We got a press release last week about the Life Tree Cafe. So please tell us what that's about.
Yeah. Well, First Christian Church has kind of been in a visioning process for the last couple of years, trying to decide future directions. And a lot of talk about what we might be doing, a lot of conversation about do we stay where we are, do we move on? And we did make a decision as a part of that process that we really love being in downtown Ames and serving the community in that way. So then the question became, if we're going to stay here, what are some of the things we're going to do? And one of the things that we realize is that there are a lot of people out there who, for various reasons, might think church is a little bit of a scary place. And we certainly don't want to be a scary place. We want to be a place that's warm and welcoming and inviting for all kinds of people, as is the case on Thanksgiving dinner. We want that to be happening in our church every day. So there were a group of folks who decided, you know, there's a program out there called Life Tree Cafe, and it's designed to be that kind of warm welcome. We turned our old-fashioned parlor into a newfangled coffee house, and in terms of the space, it's warm and inviting, and tables for four, and coffee brewing, and the smells and the sights that one would have if they went to a local coffee house. And there in that space, we're hoping to have all kinds of people who just want to connect with other people around issues that matter. And so it's a place to share stories. There's usually a video that provides some kind of content and a story of someone else. And then people are invited around the tables to talk and have conversation and get to know one another and really get that sense of being connected to other people and finding that deeper meaning.
When does the coffee house happen?
It's at every Thursday night at 7 p.m., and it's just 1 hour again. It's trying to recognize people have lots of things to do, lots of schedules to keep, and so it's always strictly 1 hour, though people can come early and they can stay late if they want to, but the program is 1 hour from 7 to 8. And we hope that will grow, and then we will add more times that people could come, that will really feed that need that people have to just connect with others face-to-face.
So describe again when it is and where.
It's at First Christian Church. Again, at 6th and Clark, 611 Clark, 6th and Clark, across from Fairway and City Hall. It's at 7 o'clock on Thursday nights, and anyone is welcome to come. And it's in our newly remodeled coffee house. And so if you come in, we have a parking lot on the west side of our building. If you come in that door, you'd go up the stairs or up the elevator to the first floor and hang a left, and it's just at the end of that hall, and there's always people there to greet you and welcome you and kind of help get you oriented.
And you told me earlier something about art. Are you going to be?
Yes. Another piece of our coffee house ministry is we are starting a coffee house arts ministry and program, and we want to bring in and feature local artists, and again, a place where people can connect around things that deepen one's life and perspective. And art so often does that. So we hope to have small concerts. We're looking into the possibility of having art displays of local artists in our space, and we're yet trying to figure out how we're going to do that. But that's our hope, to really connect with the community and be a place where people can connect with one another.
Well, there's another major change I know that's going to be happening at First Christian, and that is the loss of the Ames Community Preschool Center, ACPC.
Yes.
And can you say anything about what that's meant to you?
Yeah, that preschool has been housed at First Christian Church for 45 years. That has been a partnership. There were a couple of folks, strong members of First Christian Church, who really believed in the concept of community, child care community organizations, and worked with other community members, both inside and outside the church, to dream up and to do the legwork to start something like that. And so I, in my office, every afternoon, listen to the, you can't even say pitter-patter, the stomp-stomp of little feet above my head. And that's always been a very good sound for me, because it reminds me of the fullness of life and the life of those children. So I will definitely miss that when they go, but it has been a joy to share space with ACPC.
Now, when you talk about the church property on 6th Street, this is the house that is
this is the second floor of our brick building there on the corner
Brick building.
Yes, they have the whole second floor of that building for there. And then they also have the house as well. But in terms of our property, it's the second floor of our building.
So you have the house next door?
There are two houses, one across the parking lot, which is ACPC's. The other one is right next door on Clark, and that is used to be our parsonage. We now call it the Annex, and that is where Good Neighbor is going to be housed.
You can tell how intertwined we are.
Yes, we
as
are.
As you try to figure it out.
Well, then, what is going to happen to the property that you have on 6th Street?
When we move, which will be shortly, we are selling those properties, all three of them. The first property has a bigger gray house, and we have children in there, and they'll be moving with us. And then the next two lots, originally when we bought them, we thought perhaps we could build something there. That's why we bought those three lots. But it's turned out, with regulations for parking and so forth, that there wasn't enough space there to actually build. So that's when we started looking to see the need for childcare has just grown. So,
could you describe a little bit what your organization does and its?
All right. Well, ACPC started, like Mary Jane said, we started in 1968, back when various social programs started, and it really was a childcare preschool. That's how Ames Community Preschool started, for ADC moms and aid for dependent children. So it was primarily single moms who were trying to better themselves and perhaps go to college, go to Iowa State. And so it was child care for their preschool children. And then over the years since then, the need for child care has just taken off like crazy. And so we have expanded, and we need to expand more to meet the child care need in the community. So that's when we started looking for other places that we might be, because the church doesn't, I mean, the church has no more space, but we really wanted to stay in the central area, just like the church members at First Christian decided they wanted to stay in the local area. Mm-hmm. We wanted to stay downtown. So you start looking around for places where childcare centers could be in the local area, and it took us this many years. And then the school district decided they didn't want to use Wilson Beecher any longer, and that still is at 9th and Carroll. It's still centrally located, and it was affordable for us to buy. So we purchased that and are remodeling, and we'll be moving in there within a month, which is scary to think of when you think of what all we have to do in the next month. But we also leave, very honestly, many of the church members are excited for us because they know that we need the space, and we will have more space over there, and it'll be used for more than just ACPC. We plan to have other activities for the broader community. Raising Readers is going to be housed there. They're a local nonprofit literacy group, and so there'll be others over there. But the church members have been just very encouraging, saying they'll miss us and we'll miss them, because we've all gotten to be friends as we've grown up over the years. And those 26 Thanksgiving meals, you know, we've all, because we have an unspoken role in that, which is the church uses our big refrigerators and so forth. So we have our little part in those meals, too.
Thank you very much for being here today. And now it's time for Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio 89.1. Story City Ames, where we explore the people, stories, and events of Central Iowa. Today we've been talking with Mary Jane Button Harrison, pastor of First Christian Church, Chris Martin, the director of Food at First, about the preparations for this year's Thanksgiving meal at First Christian, and with Sue Woods, director of ACPC, telling us about the new and exciting move. A little sad, but
yes.
A little nostalgic, but it's a great, great move and some great new challenges for First Christian that we'll talk about a little bit later in the second half of the program.
Sue, if somebody would like to use the services of ACPC, could you explain a little bit how one uses those services?
Well, we have a website at www.acpc-childcare.org. And a future parent could look on there as to what services we currently have now, recognizing that we will have to change that website when we move because it has our current address and so forth. But there is enrollment information. They can go to enrollment and get a waiting list form, and or they can just call us at 233-2901. We are currently full, but we have a waiting list, and we're always accepting new children.
Do you repeat your phone number?
233-2901.
And your website?
www.acpc-childcare.org.
And who is eligible?
Any child 18 months on up. We do have a good deal of asset money. I don't know if you know what asset is, but United Way, the city, and the county all contribute to asset, and we use that funding that we get to subsidize lower-income families, which is something that ACPC has done ever since it first started in the church building, is to subsidize so any child can have the same services as those that can afford the full price.
So it's affordable to anybody?
Yes.
Uh-huh. And now, I drove past that building the other day at around 8 o'clock in the morning, and I saw young people in there sitting around a table. So this starts early in the morning?
We're open at 7, and we close at 6. And parents kind of are coming and going all day because we have parents that are on early shifts. We have parents on later shifts. We have part-time parents. We have student parents. I'd like to think, just like Mary Jane was talking about the community Thanksgiving meal being for everybody, our clients are representative of everybody. We have a lot of wonderful international students who want their children to maybe enroll to in part learn English, mm-hmm. but in part because they need them to be cared for while they're studying and mm-hmm. so forth. So it's a wonderful blend of AIMS society.
It's wonderful. And yeah. the children are served food while they're there during the day.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Breakfast, lunch, snack.
Well, I have to ask a question that I'll bet everybody who passes that wonders about. What's going to happen to the little house?
Unfortunately, the little yellow house does not get to move with us. Back when we were determining, we are moving, by the way, I didn't know if I said, to the former Wilson Bircher school building. It's at 9th and Carroll. And there is room perhaps on that area of land, but there is not a good way to dismantle that building and to bring it with us. The cost, those that tell us, those that understand of the cost, if I said it, it's just not feasible to move it. So we have the properties up for sale. I don't know if our prospective new owners want to do something with it or not. They certainly could.
If you don't know what we're talking about, there's a little house on the street there next to the near the church or two houses down that when you look at it, it's just a little bit smaller than a real house is supposed to be. It looks like somebody kind of shrank a little house. Who built that thing?
A lot of volunteers. When we that playground was developed in 1999, back when we too wanted to stay in the local area and couldn't afford to find something downtown, we did buy some more property so we had some more playground space because we really needed playground space. For those of us that have been in Ames for a long time, there used to be a big yellow house. And actually, the church owned that yellow house for some period of time. It was a residence. The church bought it. It was another nonprofit agency, had a program in it for a while. That little yellow playhouse is a replica of what that yellow, big yellow house was that used to be at 525.
That's great.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much. We need to meet some of the new neighbors.
Right.
So Mike Fritz from Good Neighbor is here. A good neighbor in every way.
Yes.
So
First Christian Church wanted to be good neighbors by partnering with Good Neighbor.
So
good morning.
So could you tell us a little, for those who don't know Good Neighbor, please just tell us a little bit about what it was, what it is, and how it got started.
I'd be happy to do that. Good Neighbor was started in 1997. It was created by a group of faith-based organizations that came together to talk about how best to serve those in poverty and the working poor throughout Story County. And through those discussions, Good Neighbor was created as kind of a gatekeeping organization that could allow these faith-based organizations to pool their resources and make sure that we were providing services to our neighbors in need. Good Neighbor provides emergency rent, utility, food, and gasoline assistance to residents throughout Story County. And each and every year, thousands of individuals will be helped through Good Neighbor from virtually every community in Story County. Last year, 308 households across Story County received rent or utility assistance. We distributed nearly 4,500 healthy food vouchers to 1,124 households. And we also distributed 195 gas vouchers.
Mike, are you the director of the program?
I am. I'm the only employee of the program. So in terms of an organization, our overhead is relatively low. And that's one of the things that's really important to us because that means that our resources can then be used for those to help those families in need. You know, when we're providing services to assist folks to prevent them from becoming homeless or making sure that the lights are on, we know that we're meeting that immediate crisis situation. But we also conduct follow-up surveys for those folks seeking rent and utility assistance. And while we do that a minimum of 8 months after the service has been provided, so I don't have stats for the last fiscal year, but the fiscal year before that, through the course of that fiscal year, 76% of the folks that received rental assistance were either still in their homes or had left in good standing with their landlords after receiving the help from Good Neighbor. And 86% of those receiving utility assistance either still had active accounts or had closed the accounts without leaving an outstanding balance. So in that way, we can see that Good Neighbor is really truly doing what our mission is, and that is to help folks when they need us. We're not an ongoing service, but when folks need us, we want to be able to help get them back on their feet.
So who qualifies for the service?
Any resident of Story County can apply for services through Good Neighbor. And part of what we do is we'll ask for documentation that will demonstrate their need. We'll more often than not sit down, and those folks will talk with me. And we'll talk not only about the immediate crisis situation, but what else is going on in the family. What other services might those families need? And we'll make referrals when necessary.
You must need some volunteers if you're the only staff member.
We rely on the support of a wonderful group of volunteers who do the day-to-day activities. They answer the phones, distribute healthy food vouchers. They help folks fill out paperwork. I have a really great group of folks that really support that. And to a person, those folks talk about how much more they appreciate their own fortunes in life by working with these folks that are in so desperate need. So I think it's a very rewarding experience for those volunteers as well.
Can you describe one situation where Good Neighbor made a difference?
Well, a story that I like to share is I'll tell you about a client that I saw. It's been about a year ago now. And it wasn't the first time that I'd actually seen her. The first time that I had seen her was back in 2008, shortly after I started as the director at Good Neighbor. She was one of the very first clients that I had met with. She had been living in southern Iowa in an extremely abusive situation, and so abusive that at a certain point she determined that the only way to ensure that she could keep herself and her small daughter safe was to get out of that home. So she contacted a friend in Ames and asked if she could move in, and the friend said sure, and they got her moved in, they got her name on the lease, they got her name on the utilities, and in the short time that she was in Ames, she'd found a job at a convenience store. And when I met with her, she talked about, for the first time in a long time, her life was really looking up. And she felt that way right up until the day that she came home from work to find that her roommate had packed all of her belongings and was gone. Mm. No one knew where she was. Mm. The young woman knew that she was all right with the rent because it had been paid for the month, but what she didn't know was the utility bills hadn't been paid for 3 months, and she was 2 days away from being disconnected. Mm. She'd spoken to her landlord, and the landlord said it was a very strict policy that if the lights got disconnected, they would evict. So she didn't know where to turn, so she came to Good Neighbor, and we helped her with that utility bill. As I said, about a year ago, one morning I was driving to work, and I stopped to get a bottle of water. And as I walked up to the counter, there was something familiar about the woman behind the counter, but I couldn't quite place it until I got to the counter and I saw her name tag, and I realized it was this woman that I'd met with 4 years earlier. And then I looked at the name tag above it that said manager. And she took my money, and she made my change, and I don't think she ever knew who I was. And she said, thanks, come again. And when I left there, I thought to myself, yeah, you do the same, but something tells me you don't need to.
That's awesome.
To me, that really demonstrates what Good Neighbor is all about.
Thank you. Well, we need to move on
quickly, right?
Yes. But please give the website.
Yeah, the website is gnea.org, mm-hmm. and our phone number is 515-296-1449.
Thank you, and we'll put that information on our website as well. Thank you so much for coming.
Before I go, I feel the need. There's been common themes here about folks talking about being in the downtown area and being thankful, and I would be remiss. Just give me one moment here to talk about what's making Good Neighbor real thankful right this minute. Currently, Good Neighbor is located on the southern edge of Ames on the corner of Jewel Drive and South Duff. A week from tomorrow, we anticipate moving into a new location that's already been discussed, 613 Clark, right next to, adjacent to First Christian Church, and a property owned by First Christian Church. This is a facility that we're currently doing a major construction project on. It's going to be a very professional and welcoming environment, and First Christian Church is allowing us to move into that space for a minimum of 10 years, rent-free.
Wow.
So when we talk about being a time of thankfulness, I can truly tell you this is a historic time for Good Neighbor, and we're very, very thankful and really excited to be returning to the downtown area.
And we're thankful too. I think everyone who knows anything about Good Neighbor is thankful that it's so accessible now.
Thank you. We've been speaking with Mike Fitz from Good Neighbor.
Mary Jane Button Harrison, pastor of First Christian. And you have a lot more space that people need to be thinking about.
We do, yes.
This is KHOI Community Radio and Local Talk. I'm your host today, Ursula Rudenberg, with Susan Franson. And we're going to turn the last part of our program over to our Local Talk reporter, Greta Anderson.
And now we are at the part of the program where we'll find out what all the farmers are doing. It's putting in drainage tiles. KHOI reporter Greta Anderson decided to explore this story because her small farm is surrounded by piles of drainage tiles for the three large farms nearby. What she learned was that almost all farmers in this part of Iowa are putting in drainage tiles. Our environmental consultant, Irv Kloss, says that without tiling, there would be no farms here. There are many ways to approach it and many complicated issues involved. So Greta interviewed farmers who have starkly contrasting views. The first is the owner of a land tiling business for large commercial farms. The second is a small organic farmer with just 1 acre. Let's hear what they have to say.
This is Greta Anderson from Local Talk. I'm here on the road in Marshalltown with Mike Nagel and his wife, Melanie. You guys are in very high demand this season. Your business is in very high demand right now. Can you tell me about that?
Yes, we're with Nagel Land Tiling, and we do field tile for farmers and stuff and many different other things, which benefits farmers and their crop production.
Okay, so after the harvest, after the corn and soy are harvested, that's not the end of the season for the farmers.
No, they got planting to do if they want field tile with us, and that way we can come out and look at it, map it out, see where they need the worst spots taken care of, because it's more into a, now it's called water management instead of draining the water out.
Okay. And that, of course, has been really important. And if the farmers didn't know that this was very important, they knew it after this last spring.
Yes, they did. There's a lot of it this spring. I'm overbooked about a year, I suppose, right now from what we've had.
Wow. And, of course, I met you because you're tiling the fields all around me. There's actually three landowners who are cooperating to...
Yep. Yeah, there's three landowners around there that want some tile in.
And tell me a little bit about this tile. What does it look like?
It's you can get it in different sizes, all different sizes. They start out at 3, 4, 5, and 6 inch. And it's in a tubular with a corrugated look, and it's got slots all the way around it. There's like, I think there's 15 per foot, which when after put it in the ground, what it does is sucks the water into it to drain that out. Any excess. It'll drain it from the sides and the top, but it won't drain from the bottom.
I was going to ask that. If it's got slots on the bottom, how come it doesn't just drain down?
It just runs through the tube, and that water that keeps that water level right there at the bottom. So basically, anything top and sides, it drains, but your bottom, that's why they call it water management. So if you want your water table up a little higher, you put it up, you know, not in the ground as deep.
Okay. Normally you put it 3 feet down, you were telling me the other day.
Yep, we range from anywhere from 3 to 5 foot, basically. And when you're putting in a pattern tile, you kind of like it around to 3 to 3.5 feet deep. That'll keep your water table right at that level.
Okay, so if it's very rainy, very wet, the water goes out. But if it's on the drier side, you're not losing any water that you might want for your crops.
Yep, and that keeps your water table at that 3.5, which your corn roots can go down there or your beans can get to that water source quicker.
Okay, and then when you map out these tiles for a particular field, where is the end of the drain? Where does it all get drained to?
Usually, if you're on the bottom end of a farm where there's a creek running through, you outlet a pipe out there into the creek. If you're amongst the middle of it, you hook onto somebody else's tile and you drain through them.
Okay. How do you know where the other person's tile is?
Experience, I guess. Usually if you see a little swale or a grass waterway, there'll be tile a lot of times in there.
Okay, so you talk about experience. How long have you been doing this?
I've been doing it for about 25 years. We started our business, about 7 years ago? And that's when she started learning how to do it.
That's right. Melanie doesn't want to talk, but she's driving what?
She usually drives a dozer, pulling the plow and putting the tile in and running the computer on the GPS.
Really? Then what do you do?
I got to dig all the holes and string the tile out for her. Dig the junctions, basically, so we can hook back into a tile.
Okay. All right. And can you, what is the name of your business again? You kind of swallowed that at the beginning.
Nagel Land Tiling.
Nagel Land Tiling. Okay. You're younger than I am, but you're probably not a spring chicken, I'd say. So what is your view of how things have gone in recent years? Do you think there's any merit to this term climate change?
Me, no. I don't think so. I don't believe in it. I think it's just to me, the Earth cycles. I mean, you see stuff we've seen back in the older days, like in the 30s and the 20s with the snowstorms and the droughts, and it's just cycling back again.
Okay, so but are you saying then that you have seen a difference in recent years?
Yeah, I mean, we've seen different stuff. We've never had a year the same like we used to back in, 20 years ago. You had constant years of the same, spring, summer, fall. Now you see spring, summer, and fall move in different directions.
When a farmer invests in this tile, how long do you think it's going to take him to recapture that investment?
On the average, when I talk to most of them, they figure around 4 years. If they invest the money back in 4 years, they're going to get their crops. With the crop producing more per acre, they'll get their money back.
Okay. So that's a pretty significant risk, and a lot of the farmers are doing it because they haven't been making money in the last couple years.
Yep, and they figured out that you manage water a little better, you can actually make more money because you're getting more bushels per acre. And it's also a good investment on their farms, too, because it adds value to it.
What's the most unique kind of farm that you have put tile in?
There's been several of them. I've been on sand pits, it seems to be, where everything underneath is just solid sand.
Well, you would think that that would drain really well.
It don't. It creates water holes like you wouldn't believe. The sand gets so much moisture in it, it actually starts coming up and running out of the ground. And compared to another soil where it keeps it and it can flow through it better.
Interesting. So what do you think about the soil around my place?
That is very good soil. I mean, it's going to drain where we're placing the tile at right now at the level. It's going to drain that soil really good. And you probably wouldn't surprise me. You'll see somebody out there working that field in the spring a couple days ahead of everybody else because it dries it out enough.
So that's an interesting thing to look at when you see the first farmers out in the field. They've got probably some pretty good land because their land has been drained better.
Yes, that's usually what happens. And the type of tile we're putting over there, the pattern, really helps it out better too because, like I said, a couple days ahead of time, they'll be out there before anybody else.
Did you receive special training for this kind of work, or did you just learn on the job?
Learned on the job. I started with somebody else several years ago and learned from them and took it from that.
Anything else you'd like to say? Do you have a farm of your own?
Yes, we have a farm of our own. I got 200 acres and 8 head of cattle and 3 white-tailed deer I got.
Well, it sounds like this gives you a pretty good living then.
Yes, it does. It keeps us good. I mean, we enjoy it. We get to work together, which most husband and wives don't like working together, but we enjoy it.
That was Mike Nagel from Nagel Land Tiling from Garwin, Iowa. This is Greta Anderson from Local Talk. I'm here talking with Joe Lynch of Onion Creek Farm. Joe is an organic farmer, a small vegetable farmer, who recently, I heard, tiled some of his land. So we were just speaking with a person who installs tile in large commercial scale farms. Here we are talking about a small local farmer, Joe, who's doing this. Joe, can you tell me why you chose to tile your land?
Well, the north 75 feet of our 1 acre vegetable field, which is all we're talking about here, has been too wet to farm 4 out of the last 10 or 11 years. We would struggle with farming it, but it didn't work very well because it was way too wet. And what we chose to do was put in one tile line to hopefully drain down the groundwater system and take that water down to an existing wetland on our property to make it so that in really wet years, we could still use that little bit of land, which is critical to our small vegetable growing operation.
And how did that go? How's it worked?
Well, we put it in 2009, and we haven't had anything remotely resembling too much water since then. The last 2 years have been very dry here, driest I've ever seen it, certainly in the 35 years I've been associated with this piece of property. And so the groundwater system hasn't even come close to filling up again, which is what would have to happen before the tile takes effect and has any impact on the use of that particular small piece of land. So I don't know whether it's going to work or not, to be honest.
Okay, so unlike most of the farmers who are putting in tile, they're dealing with surface water that is coming through and penetrating the soil, whereas you're talking about a groundwater system filling up and that impacting your land.
Right, where my flat vegetable field is downhill from a kind of groundwater drainage system, that's because there's these fairly tall hills for central Iowa, you know, the upstream of me. That's kind of the pattern that the groundwater system follows, and it happens to run right underneath the north 75 feet of my vegetable field. So our choice was to just simply drain that quarter of an acre down into an existing wet spot.
So you mentioned that you took your tile down to your marshland instead of down to
creek.
The creek, which is on your farm. Why didn't you go all the way to the creek?
Well, because that's the problem with tiling from my perspective. Normal large-scale commercial tiling dumps the tile water into the county tiles, and it speeds the whole process of draining the land to the rivers, and it increases the flood peaks, increases the not only the size of the flood, but how fast it happens, and makes a big difference from what I understand. Once the water gets into the tile, there's nothing that stops it from heading straight into the river right now. There's nothing that slows it down. Well, that's if you think about the whole soil system, that's what its whole purpose is. That's the way it works, is to slow down the water. And when you short-circuit that whole process, you end up with floods.
Okay, well, we'll have to see if all this tiling that's going on this fall and over the summer is going to impact our floods in the future.
I don't know whether there's any way to really measure that easily or not, but I'd be surprised if it wasn't the case.
Thank you, Joe.
You have been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. Today's show centered on the First Christian Church at 6th and Clark and the changes it's making in the neighborhood. We are your hosts today, Susan Franzen and
Ursula Rudenberg. And today we spoke with Hannah Dankbar and Rebecca Brown of the Story County Volunteer Center, Mary Jane Button Harrison, pastor of the First Christian Church, Chris Martin of the Food, who is the food director of Food at First, the meal program, Sue Woos, who is the executive director of the Ames Community Preschool Center, and Mike Fitz of Good Neighbor Emergency Service.
Mike and Melanie Nagel of Nagel Land Tiling, Joe Lynch of Onion Creek Farm. Our reporter today was Greta Anderson. This program was engineered by Richard Morrison.
You can also listen to this show and all of our past Local Talk shows online at our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org. If you enjoyed this show, tell your friends. And check us out on Facebook. And our website is khoifm.org. You can find our show at the Programs tab on the homepage. Click to Local Talk. Local Talk is a radio production training workshop as well as a radio show. And if you would like to join our team as a reporter, you are most welcome. Please contact us at 292-2878. That's 292-2878 or through our website at khoifm.org. Please, we're coming to the end of the year. Remember KHOI and consider making a donation. We're looking for 500 families or individuals who can donate $250 or more. And if we get that, we can cover our operation expenses here at the station. Your participation as the audience and your donations help make KHOI possible. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again on the radio.